Hi, everybody. Pastor Tim here. Welcome to the Brands Bible Institute. We are in module number 11 on the book of Revelation. This is lesson number 15. Last week, I gave you guys an introduction to chapters 4 and 5, which deals with the seating of the heavenly court. And the heavenly or celestial court is described earlier in Daniel chapter 7. Where the Ancient of Days takes his seat, and then the other thrones are also put in place. And there are myriads and myriads of angels ministering to him and so forth. Well, this is the same scene that we see in Revelation chapters 4 and 5, and it actually extends throughout the book of Revelation all the way to the second coming of Christ, because when we read in Daniel 7, we see that the Son of Man comes with the clouds of heaven, and then he is brought before the Ancient of Days, that is, before this court that's been seated, and the kingdoms of the earth are delivered to the Son of Man, who comes with the clouds of heaven. Okay, so those two events are described in Daniel chapter 7, the seating of the court at the beginning, and then we see that the Antichrist, or the little horn, exercises power and authority after the heavenly court is seated. And then we see that towards the end of the chapter, then the Son of Man comes on the clouds. He's brought before the Ancient of Days, and he's given the kingdom. All right, so those two events are sort of like bookends for Revelation chapters 4 through really chapter 19. Of Revelation. All right. Now, what I'm going to try to do today, if time permits, I would like to get through all of chapter 4. All right. So, anyway, let's read through chapter 4. It's not a very long chapter, and then we'll comment on the different things. All right. Beginning of verse 1, and again, I'm reading from the Last Generation version, which you can acquire free of charge of Revelation on our website, www.fourwindsfellowships, that's the number 4, not spelled out, fourwindsfellowships.net. Click on the link at the top that says LGV for Last Generation Version, and then click on Revelation. You can right-click it and download it to your computer. I recommend that you print it out, because that will provide you with a written text as we are going through. All right, verse 1. After these things I observed, and look, a door having been opened in the sky, and the first voice I heard was like a trumpet speaking with me, saying, "Come up here, and I will show you what is required to take place after these things." Immediately I came to be in the breath, and look, a throne was sitting, and someone was seated on the throne. The one seated had an appearance similar to jasper and sardine stone. And a rainbow encircled the throne, similar in appearance to an emerald. And encircling the throne were 24 thrones. And on the thrones I saw 24 elders sitting, having been clothed in white robes, and on their head golden wreaths. And lightning discharged from the throne, and thunders and voices. And 7 lamps of fire were burning before the throne, which are the 7 breaths of God. Before the throne was a glassy sea similar to crystal, and in the center of the throne and around the throne were 4 creatures covered with eyes front and back. The first creature was like a lion, the second like an ox, the third creature had the face like a man, and the fourth creature like a flying eagle. Each of the 4 creatures had 6 wings, covered with eyes outside and inside, and they take no rest day or night, saying, quote, "Holy, holy, holy, Master God, sovereign over all, who was, who is, and who is to come." And whenever the creatures will give glory and honor and thanks to the one sitting on the throne, the one living to the ages of the ages, the 24 elders will fall down before the one sitting on the throne and will worship the one who lives unto the ages of the ages. And they throw their wreaths before the throne, saying, "Master, you are worthy to receive the glory and the honor and the power, because you created everything, and through your decree they exist and were created." All right, let's go back to the beginning here. We saw that there was a door opened in heaven, or this is the vision that John is seeing. Remember, this is a vision. This is not, John doesn't literally have a out-of-body experience, nor is he bodily caught up into heaven, but he sees things as though he is being transported to heaven, because this is how it works when you are in the breath or in the spirit. And we've seen that before. We've talked about that before. All right, now go back to Daniel chapter 9. Chapter 7, verse 9. He says, I watched till thrones were put in place. And I commented on this last time that the language that Daniel uses, which is parallel to Revelation 4 and 5, in this language, it's not that Daniel suddenly simply became or was made aware of heaven and thrones there and God being seated on the throne, but rather he sees these things being put into place, which implies then that this is not the normal scene in heaven. This is something that's being put in place. Daniel's given a vision of it being put in place, and John is given a vision. He's caught up to examine this thing, but again, we can infer from Daniel that John is seeing the same thing, essentially, that even though he doesn't specifically say he sees these things being put in place. But anyway, he says, I watched till thrones were put in place, and the Ancient of Days was seated. So he took his seat at this time. His garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was a fiery flame, its wheels a burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him, and thousands ministered to him. Now we'll see this in the next chapter, in chapter 11 of Revelation, that before the throne of God in heaven, with him seated on the throne, there are myriads and myriads, that is thousands times thousands, of angels, and it specifically names them as angels in Revelation chapter 5. So that's what we see here when he says thousands minister to him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. Now, this is the important phrase I want you to see. The court was seated and the books were opened. Now, that statement right there, the court was seated and the books were opened, again, the court being seated is an event that's taking place that Daniel is allowed to see. And the books being opened is another event that Daniel is observing. So it's not that the books are opened. It's not that the court is seated. It's that these thrones are put in place. The Ancient of Days takes his seat and the court is seated. And then when the court is seated, we see that it's being seated at the time that this little horn, who is the Antichrist, comes up among the 10 horns that are already ruling, which we talked about last time in the introduction here, okay? All right, that's a critical point that we need to understand as we're examining Revelation chapter 4. Now, he goes on to say in chapter 4 that when he's describing, John is describing this this event, he says, I came to be in the breath, and look, a throne was sitting, and someone seated on the throne. The one seated had an appearance similar to jasper and sardine stone. Now, both jasper and sardine stone have a reddish color. They are slightly different in their hue, but they are both a primarily reddish or reddish-brown in their coloring. So, and he's talking about the one seated on the throne. So he apparently had a reddish glow. And it says, and a rainbow encircled the throne, similar in appearance to emerald. Now, emerald, as you know, is green. So there is a rainbow encircling the throne that has a green hue, some sort of green hue, or it may have many green, different shades of green in it as well. Now, and a little bit later, we're going to take a look at Ezekiel chapter 1. Where Ezekiel has a vision very similar to this vision also. And he says that the throne itself was the color of sapphire, which is blue. So we have these three colors that apparently are there. And Ezekiel also sees all the rainbow colors as well in encircling the throne. So it wasn't just green. There apparently was other colors also. All right, anyway, he says, verse 4, he says, encircling the throne were 24 thrones. And on the thrones I saw 24 elders sitting, having been clothed in white robes, and on their heads golden wreaths. Now, these 24 thrones and 24 elders, the 24 thrones are a part of what Daniel saw when he says he saw thrones, plural, put into place. That would be these 24 thrones. And on them are 24 elders. Now, what does the word elder mean? It's used in the Bible in different ways. It's used of the elders of Israel, the nation of Israel. It's used of elders of the assembly. And now it's being used of 24 elders seated in heaven. The word itself simply refers to someone who is older. That's the literal meaning of the word. But it's often used in reference to rank, that is, because a senior is considered to have higher rank than younger persons. And so, that's true throughout the Bible. And so, elder can be used either for someone who's older in age or someone who has the higher rank. And so, when it calls these 24 elders, it's referring to highest rank. Now, most of you probably are aware of the fact that those who teach the pre-tribulation rapture point to this passage where it talks about these 24 elders in heaven, and they're seated on thrones, and they have white robes, and they have golden wreaths or crowns on their heads. And they say that they interpret that as being symbolic of the fact that the rapture has already occurred. In fact, what they typically say is in verse 1, where it says that he heard a voice like a trumpet saying, "Come up here and I will show you what is required to take place after these things." And then he's caught up in the breath, that this is a sort of a figurative description of the so-called rapture, where all true Christians are caught up into heaven. Well, that's not what the text says. The text says John was caught up, and he was caught up in order to see what is to take place after these things, that is, at the end of the age. And so that's really a stretch to try to cram the entire, all of Christ's followers into John, who's caught up into heaven in vision in order to see the future. So as you see, that's really a stretch. But also it's a stretch when it comes to the 24 elders, because, again, they say, well, now the 24 elders represent the whole assembly or the whole, body of Christ, all churches, all true Christians, having been resurrected, having been caught up to heaven, and now they're in heaven, they're seated on thrones because, that's a symbol of authority, and the fact that they're wearing white robes, because Christians are said to wear white robes later in Revelation, and throughout the epistles where it talks about, us receiving the crown of life, and these are wearing crowns, and therefore from those three things they infer that the rapture of Christianity, of true Christians, is before the time of tribulation. And as you can see, that's really, really stretching. Plus, why is it then, if that's the interpretation of this, why is it then that John himself is supposed to represent the Christians being caught up to heaven, but then all of a sudden now it's the 24 elders that represent Christians in heaven? You see that it's not being consistent, right? They're picking and choosing who represents what in order to make it come out the way they want it to come out, but that's not how scripture ought to be interpreted. All right, well, that's enough about that. But anyway, what about these 24 elders? Who are they, and why is there 24? Well, one of the things we need to notice, first of all, is that according to the book of Hebrews, the temple, or the tabernacle, I should say, which was a prototype for the temple, the tabernacle, the specifications and design of the tabernacle was given to Moses on Mount Sinai. by God himself. And the book of Hebrews quotes from that. It says that Moses was told to make sure that he makes everything according to the pattern or model that was shown to him, not just told to him, but that was shown to him while he was on Mount Sinai in the presence of God. So we know that and Hebrews goes on to tell us that the tabernacle was only a sort of a illustration or an imperfect copy of portrayal of the temple of God that's in heaven. And it makes that point because of the comparison of the priesthood on earth that was on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, that took the blood into the Holy of Holies in the tabernacle on earth. And Hebrews compares that to Christ taking his own blood, not into the copy of the things in the heavens, that is the temple in the heavens, but into heaven itself, that is into the true temple in heaven. And we will see as we work our way through the book of Revelation that the temple in heaven, that is the true temple that God made and not man, that the true temple is something that is that there's activity going on in the true temple in heaven throughout this period of God being seated on his throne and rendering judgment upon the earth that we see here, or the celestial court that's going on. We'll see stuff happening in the temple in heaven, and also the furnishings of the temple in heaven. The altar of incense is talked about in Revelation 4 and 5. And so because the tabernacle on earth is a copy of what goes on in the heavens, when Revelation is telling us what's going on in the heavens, and it's using symbolism, it's actually drawing from the commandments that God gave to Moses with regard to the tabernacle on earth and the priesthood. So understanding the tabernacle on earth, understanding how the priesthood worked on earth, understanding how that then actually, that the way the priests functioned in the Mosaic Covenant, the Levites and the priests, the way they functioned was actually added to by David, King David. And it's not specifically part of the Mosaic Covenant, but it was a modification that David made because of the number of priests that had multiplied throughout that. But if you were to, you can just jot this down. We're not going to go there. Well, actually, let's go there. Let's go there. I think it's important that we look at this. Go to 1 Chronicles chapter 6 and we're going to read verse 49. All right, 1 Chronicles 6, 49. And now notice, what I want you to notice here is who it is that has charge over the golden altar of incense that's before the throne, before the curtain or the veil that leads into the Holy of Holies where the Ark of the Covenant was. All right, so verse 49. But Aaron and his sons offered sacrifices on the altar of burnt offering and on the altar of incense. Now the altar of burnt offering is the one that's out in front of the tabernacle. The altar of incense is the one inside, but just before the veil. All the work of the most holy place, and to make atonement for Israel according to all that Moses, the servant of God, commanded. Now these are the sons of Aaron, and then he goes on to describe the sons of Aaron and so forth. Now, go over to 1 Chronicles chapter 24. Verse 1. Now these are the divisions of the sons of Aaron. Now notice it's the sons of Aaron. See, all there in the temple, that those who worked in the temple were of the tribe of Levi. You had to be of the tribe of Levi to participate in what we call priestly functioning at the temple. All right, they had the other 11 tribes of Israel were not allowed into the area close to the temple that was called the court of the priests, and that's where the altar of sacrifice was, and the temple structure itself was there. The laver where they washed was there, and then of course inside the temple structure you had to go through another veil. Inside there you had the golden lampstand or the menorah, you had the table of showbread on the other side, and then straight ahead before the veil you have the golden altar of incense. All right, now what we saw earlier was it was only the sons of Aaron. Now Aaron was a Levite, he was of the tribe of Levi, as was Moses, but Aaron himself, several generations from Levi, his sons were only a small segment of the tribe of Levi, because, as I said, the tribe of Levi started with Levi, and Aaron is like four generations later. All right, so you had a lot more Levites than you had sons of Aaron. Sons of Aaron is a subgroup within the Levites. All right, and so it's the sons of Aaron that had charge over the things inside the temple structure itself. Okay. So anyway, it says, chapter 24, verse 1 says, "Now these are the divisions of the sons of Aaron. The sons of Aaron were Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar." And then he goes on and says, verse 3 says, "And David with Zadok and the sons of Eleazar and Abimelech of the sons of Ithamar divided some according to the schedule of their service." So they're simply altering these families that are, all of them are descended from Aaron, the high priest. There were more leaders found of the sons of Eleazar than the sons of Ithamar, and so forth. Verse 5, "Thus they were divided by lot, one group as another, for there were officials of the sanctuary and officials of the house of God from the sons of Eleazar, from the sons of Ithamar." And the scribe, and so forth. Let's skip down to verse 7. "Now the first lot fell to Jehoiarib, the second to Jedidiah, the third to Harim, the fourth to Seorim, the fifth to Malachijah, the sixth to Mijamim, the seventh to Hakaz, the eighth to Abijah," and so forth. I'm not going to read them all, but he goes on to say they're casting lots and they're dividing up the sons of Aaron, and if you read it all the way down, you see that there are a total of 24 groups by family, and by lot they put them in a certain sequence. Okay, so we have 24, and these are called the 24 courses of the priests. And again, it was these 24 courses who were the sons of Aaron, who back in chapter 6 it says that the sons of Aaron are the ones who had charge over the inner workings of the temple and the altar of incense, the golden altar of incense. Well, in the Gospel of Luke, we don't need to go there, but in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 1, verses 5 through 11, we learn that John the Baptist's father, whose name was Zacharias, was one of the priests who was one of the sons of Aaron, or a descendant of Aaron, and it says that he was of the course of Abijah, right? And that was the eighth course, according to 1 Chronicles 24, verse 10. He was Zacharias, John the Baptist's father, was a priest according to the order of Abijah. And also in that passage, it goes on to say that it fell upon him, his lot, to be ministering at the altar of incense. That is, he was offering incense on the golden altar that's before the throne, and that's when the angel Gabriel appeared to him, it says, on the right side of the altar of incense. All right, so it's clear that these 24 courses of priests were divided up in a certain sequence so that their function, you know, with taking care of the inner workings of the temple, including the golden altar, would fall to them by lot according to their 24 courses. Okay? Now, the reason that's important is when we get, if you go over to Revelation chapter 5, just turn a page over to chapter 5, verse 8, it says, and when he took the scroll, this is the Lamb, which we'll get into later, he took the scroll, the four creatures and 24 elders bowed down before the Lamb, each having a harp with golden bowls full of incense. Now notice the incense here, which are the prayers of the saints. All right, now, the 24 elders have bowls of incense. All right, now, and this is symbolizing the incense being offered up to God by the 24 elders is symbolizing the prayers of the saints that come up before God. So this is really telling us also what the golden altar of incense in the temple of God actually represented. It was a allegorical representation of God's listening to the prayers of his people that come up before his throne, which would be represented by the Ark of the Covenant in the Holy of Holies, right? Well, what's important here in this verse is that the ones who are doing this, the ones who are offering up the incense on the golden altar, those on earth are the 24 courses of priests rotating through this duty, but here in heaven, it's the 24 elders that are offering up the incense, which is the prayers of the saints, on the golden altar in the actual temple in heaven. Okay, so you can see there's a clear correspondence between what's going on in heaven and what's going on earth, and the number 24, the fact that there are 24 elders in heaven that are doing this, offering incense on the golden altar, and the 24 priests, courses of priests on earth, doing it on earth. All right, now, one more point, and I want to show you that these 24 elders are angels. They're not human beings that are in heaven, okay? If you go over to chapter 8 of Revelation, we see this is mentioned one more time in verse 3. And another messenger came, and messenger is the word angel, okay? And of course, if it's a messenger in heaven, then it's an angel like we think of angels, right, which is a heavenly being. If the word messenger is used of someone on earth, it can refer to a human being, just like John the Baptist was called a messenger, using the same word. But anyway, he says, another messenger came and stood before the altar, having a golden censer. Now, that's exactly the same thing it said of the 24 elders earlier. And much incense was given to him that he should offer it with the prayers of the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. So we see that in chapter 8, and there's a different context in chapter 8, which we'll talk about when we get to chapter 8. But what this is one of the 24 elders. And here he is called another angel. All right, so he's functioning just like the 24 elders are, offering incense on the golden altar. Now, when we put all these verses together, we put all these pieces of information together, what we're learning is that there are 24 elders or angelic beings in heaven who offer up incense upon the golden altar of incense that's in the temple in heaven before the throne, and that with the incense coming up before God comes up the prayers of the saints. Okay, that is the reality of what these symbols mean, is that these 24 elders are angels who are acting in the role of the sons of Aaron on earth in the earthly priesthood. Okay, so they are angels acting in a priestly role in the temple in heaven. All right, so I just wanted to show you that's how we can be sure that these are not human beings that were caught up into heaven in a pre-tribulation rapture, and now they're doing all these things in heaven according to our pre-trib friends. All right, let's look at verse back to Revelation 4. Let's look at verse 5. It says now that lightning discharge from the throne, and thunders and voices. Now, lightning, thunder, and voices. We see these three things mentioned several times in Revelation. It's here in chapter 4, and this is at the beginning of what we're going to see in chapter 5, which is the scroll that has seven seals, and it being opened by the Lamb. Okay, the Lamb, who obviously is Christ. So the seven sealed scroll is the judgments pronounced by God upon the Antichrist and his kingdom, and actually it's upon all human government, all right? Because when we see in the vision in Daniel chapter 7, where the court is seated and the Ancient of Days takes his seat and all these other thrones are put in place and the myriads of angels are encircling the throne, which we see both in Daniel 7 and in Revelation 4 and 5, that this is the court that's seated. We see here that lightning, thunders, and voices are coming out of the throne. Well, we see this again in Revelation chapter 8, verse 5, just as the seven trumpets are sounded. In Revelation 11:19, and again in Revelation 16:18, that's at the end of the trumpets, that is at the time when the Son of Man is given the kingdoms of the world, which was also described in Daniel 7. And then again in Revelation recaps that again in Revelation 16:18, at the time that the Antichrist is destroyed. So what we see is coming out of the throne is this, is lightnings and thunder and voices. John says elsewhere that it sounds like many waters, like a torrent of waters. I don't know how many of you have been to Niagara Falls, but the sound of the water going over the falls is deafening. Well, this is the kind of sound that John described of these voices that sound like many waters coming out of the throne of God and the thunder and the lightning. All right, so what we see is these things happen at the time that major judgments are being pronounced by God, and it's portrayed this way. And you know, there's really a similarity there to what God did on Mount Sinai when he came down in the presence of all Israel. We had the fire and the smoke and the sound like a trumpet and so forth. We had all this noise that was terrifying taking place then, and here we have the same kind of terrifying noise and visual display that's going on when God is pronouncing his judgments upon human government. All right, anyway, then he goes on to say that in verse 5, that he also saw seven lamps of fire burning before the throne, and it says, which are the seven breaths of God. Now, again, this is one little piece of information that we have found before. We had on earth the seven lamp stands there, but they didn't it didn't say that there were lamps on those lamp stands, which were the seven assemblies. Here we have the seven lamps, which belong to the seven lamp stands, yet the seven lamps are before the throne of God in heaven. And what this shows is the connection between the assembly and God's throne. And then it says, which are the seven breaths of God? And again, we've talked about the seven breaths before. We don't need to go over that again. But also in chapter 5, we will learn that the seven breaths are also the seven eyes on the Lamb that we'll get to when we get to chapter 5. All right, verse 6. Before the throne was a glassy sea, similar to crystal. Now, this is interesting, that before the throne, or that is in view of the throne, that is in front of the throne, is a glassy sea. Now, some people make the mistake of thinking that a glassy sea means it's a sea made of glass, like crystal. It's not a sea made of glass. It's not glass like a sea. It's a sea like glass, okay? Glassy is actually an adjective describing sea. So the literal thing that he saw was a sea, which is water. But it is a glassy sea because this is an expression that describes perfect calm. That is, the sea is so calm and the surface so smooth and undisturbed that it looks like glass or crystal. And we'll see this again later when, I believe it's in chapter 15, where it talks about the saints standing on the glassy sea in the midst of fire, which is we'll get to that later. But what would a glassy sea represent? Remember, this is symbolism. What would a glassy sea represent? Well, first of all, glassy sea would represent peaceful, right? You remember when Jesus rebuked the sea and the wind when he was in the boat with the disciples on the Sea of Galilee, and the sea became calm, perfectly calm and smooth. Well, that was a glassy sea after Christ rebuked the wind and the waves. So it represents perfect calm, but also a sea represents an abundant supply of water, right? Well, what would that represent? Well, we also see that there is something very similar to this, glassy, using the same adjective, in Revelation chapter 21, I believe it is. Revelation chapter 21, verse 1, talks about the river of life like crystal. It uses the same terminology that we have here for the sea of like crystal, the glassy sea like crystal. So he has a river of life running out of God's throne and in the new Jerusalem or the restored Jerusalem. We have that in Revelation chapter 22, verse 1. So the fact that we have these connections to the throne of God, and also in Ezekiel it talks about this river that flows from the throne of God, that he saw there as well. So the glassy sea then would represent the supply of the water of life that flows from God's throne. And in the kingdom, there literally will be this water of life flowing from the throne of God in the kingdom. And it says, in, according to Ezekiel, that the water is going to be a tremendous amount of water that's going to flow into the Dead Sea and heal the Dead Sea, and all the creatures there will there'll be an abundance of fishing and so forth. We see that in Ezekiel as well. All right, so the sea like crystal represents the supply of the water of life from the throne of God that is going to renew the face of the earth in the coming kingdom. All right, now I want to continue reading here where he begins to talk about these four creatures. All right, let's look at chapter 4 again. The second part of verse 6, it says, "And in the center of the throne and around the throne were four creatures covered with eyes front and back. The first creature was like a lion, the second creature like an ox, the third creature had the face of a man, the fourth creature was like a flying eagle. Each of the four creatures had six wings, covered with eyes outside and inside, and they take no rest day or night, saying, 'Holy, holy, holy, Master God, sovereign over all, who was and is to come.'" Now, what are these creatures, and why do they have four faces, and why does each one have a different face? And there's the face of a man, there's the face of a lion, face of an ox, the face of a man, and the face of an eagle, on four faces on these four creatures. Now, let's go to Ezekiel, because there's no question that John here is, or this vision, is drawing on the prophecy of Ezekiel. So let's go to Ezekiel chapter 1, where we also have the four creatures with the same face, same four faces. Ezekiel chapter 1. Well, what's interesting here is we see these strange creatures with multiple wings and faces. Ezekiel, when he was called to be God's prophet, the way that God called him to be his prophet was with this vision that he's of seeing these four creatures and the throne of God. Well, we see something similar to that when Isaiah was called to be God's prophet in Isaiah chapter 6, which we may look at briefly later. But all right, so Ezekiel chapter 1, verse 1, it says, "Now it came to pass in the 30th year, in the fourth month, on the fifth day of the month, that I was among the captives by the river Kibar, that the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God." Now, the river Kibar, this is during the beginning of the exile, when Nebuchadnezzar had taken some captives from Jerusalem just prior to him coming and destroying the city. Daniel was captured, and also Ezekiel and others. Anyway, he says, "On the fifth day of the month, which was the fifth year of King Jehoiakim's captivity, the word of the Lord came expressly to Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans by the river Kibar, and the hand of the Lord was upon him there. And I looked, and behold, a whirlwind was coming out of the north." Now I want you to notice that the vision that he sees is coming out of the north. Okay, this is a critical piece of information that we'll see in just a moment. "A great cloud with raging fire engulfing itself, and brightness was all around, and it radiated out of its midst like the color of amber out of the midst of the fire. Also from within it came the likeness of four living creatures, and this was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man. Each one had four faces, and each one had four wings. Their legs were straight, and the soles of their feet were like the soles of calves' feet. They sparkled like the color of burnished bronze. The hands of a man were under their wings on the four sides, and each of the four had faces and wings. Their wings touched one another, and the creatures did not turn." Now notice this, "the creatures did not turn when they went, and each one went straight forward." All right, now, it's important, number one, that he sees this vision approaching him from the north. Secondly, it's important that he says that these creatures, these four creatures, when they moved, they traveled, they did not turn their orientation. Okay? And each one of these creatures had four faces, it says. So whichever face was facing one of the cardinal points of the compass, that face always faced in that direction. If they were to go east, then one face would be leading. If they were to be going north, a different face would be leading. If they were going south, a different face would be leading. And if they were going west, a different face would be leading, because they did not change their orientation. All right, that's an important point. All right, now let's continue reading. Let's go down to verse... let's go all the way down to verse... I'm going to talk about their faces. Look at verse 17. "When they moved, they went toward any one of the four directions. They did not turn aside when they went." All right, again, he's saying that they didn't change their orientation. Where are the faces described? I must have skipped it. Okay, here we go. I'm sorry. Verse 10. "As for the likeness of their faces, each had the face of a man. Each of the four had the face of a lion on the right side." Now, I want you to pay attention to this, and you have to kind of imagine this in your head, or maybe you can draw a diagram of it. All right. It says, "Each had the face of a man." Now, that's the first thing that Ezekiel noticed when these four creatures are coming towards him from the north, that each had the face of a man. So what that would tell us then is that the face of a man was facing south, because it's coming towards Ezekiel out of the north. So in order to come from the north toward Ezekiel, the face that Ezekiel would first see would be the face that is facing south, right? And this is the face of a man. And then he says, "Each of the four had the face of a lion on the right side." So if the face of a man is facing Ezekiel from the north, then the right side would be facing east. Okay, right now as I'm recording this, I'm facing north. So I'm picturing these four creatures coming from that direction towards me. Well, to my right is east. So to the right side, as Ezekiel's observing this coming towards him, to the right side, he says, is the face of a lion. And then he said, on the forehead, the face of an ox on the left side. So for me, that would be facing west. And then he says, and each of the four had the face of an eagle. Now, he doesn't give an orientation for that, but that would be the only one left, which would be then on the backside, which would be facing north from Ezekiel's perspective. Okay? All right, now, you can read the rest of Ezekiel chapter 1 when you have time, because I'm running a little short of time here. But I want to talk to you, in the time that we have left, I want to talk to you about what do these seven faces on these four creatures represent. Now remember, in Ezekiel's vision, they are oriented or are oriented towards the four points of the compass. Okay? The eagle is facing north, that is 360. And then the face of the lion is facing east, the face of the ox is facing west, and the face of the man is facing south towards Ezekiel. Now, the creatures, when they appear in heaven to John, each of the four creatures has one face only, and they're all facing John. And so John sees one of them having the face of the eagle, one of them having the face of the man, one of them having the face of a lion, one of them having the face of an ox. But what we need to do in order to interpret what these mean is, again, remember, there's the temple of God in heaven, and there's the temple of God on earth. When these creatures are portrayed as coming and approaching Ezekiel on earth, they are oriented towards the points of the compass, right? Okay, so what do they mean? Well, the eagle is facing north, and north on these creatures then, as they're approaching Ezekiel, would be looking back from where they came, right? Now, what's interesting is we see that the north signifies the place of God, that is his throne. We see this in the Isaiah chapter 14, where it's talking about Lucifer having fallen from heaven and so forth, and he says in his heart, I will ascend up to the temple of God, or I will ascend to the sides of the north. I will be like the Most High, right? So the orientation of north is just because our maps are oriented with north as always up, that as being towards God's place, north tends to be the place or symbolize the place where God came from. Well, the eagle's facing north, and the eagle then represents the pre-incarnate Son of God, that is Christ in his pre-incarnate state. Now we see in Exodus chapter 19, verse 4, that God says through Moses to Israel, I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now who was it that bore Israel in the Old Testament? According to Hebrews chapter 1, the one who carried all things by the word of his power, using the same terminology used of God bearing Israel, is the Son in Hebrews chapter 1. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, the rock who carried Israel in the Old Testament is identified as Christ. Paul does that in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, I believe is verse 4. All right. In Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 11, God equates the fact that he has nurtured Israel as an eagle that spreads its wings and its feathers over its young to protect its young. And again, in Isaiah 40, verse 31, it talks about the saints, those who wait on the Lord, as they will run like eagles. And then, of course, eagles also represent, or they're known for a couple of things. Number one, they're known for the bird that can fly higher than any other bird. And so if you want to represent the Son of God as coming from heaven and returning to heaven, all throughout the Old Testament, he came down as the messenger of God in order to appear to mankind and establish covenants and so forth. And then he ascended back up into heaven, and we see him ascending and descending repeatedly. The eagle is by far the best metaphor for Christ in his pre-incarnate state as the messenger of Jehovah. And we see this also portrayed in John 3:13, where John says, no man has ascended into heaven except the one who came down from heaven, that is, the Son of Man who is in heaven. And so the eagle represents the one who was able all down through his through Israel's history to come down from heaven manifest God's will or his words personally. He appeared to Moses. He appeared in the burning bush. He appeared to Abraham to confirm the covenant. He appeared on Mount Sinai. We see all this happening in the Old Testament. That's what the eagle represents, is Christ's role there as the messenger of God. Then in the lion, what is the lion? Remember, the lion is facing the east, right? Well, the lion is portrayed later in Revelation as Christ is portrayed as the lion of the tribe of Judah. This also comes from Jacob when he blessed his sons, and he talked about Judah being a lion's whelp, and he talks about the scepter not departing from Judah, the lion. Again, because Christ comes from the tribe of Judah, and the lion with the scepter is the king who reigns. And why is he facing east? Well, in Malachi chapter 4, verses 1 through 3, the arrival of the Son of God to reign on earth is portrayed as the sun rising out in the east. That is the light, finally, of God filling the whole earth. So it's Christ's coming is portrayed as dawn, the dawn of the kingdom arriving. And Peter uses the same terminology with regard to Christ's kingdom arriving on earth as the rising dawn of the sun. So that's because it comes from the east. Then, of course, the ox is facing the west. What does that have? What does the ox represent? Well, the ox represents Christ's mission extended by means of the apostles. And he sent his apostles out. If you read through the book of Acts and you follow the progress of the apostolic mission, you'll see that it's constantly pushing westward, not eastward. In fact, we reach a point in the book of Acts where Paul decides he wants to start go preaching more towards the east, and it says that the holy breath of God forbid him. And instead, during the night, he had a vision of the men of Macedonia, which was much farther west, calling and saying, come over here and help us. And so Paul took that as God instructing him to push farther west. And we see that the gospel kept pushing farther and farther west, westward as opposed to eastward. And even after the spread of the gospel westward, we see that the gospel continued to push westward as time went on, even all the way to the New World, to America. And then from America, we have missionaries going to the Far East, and the gospel then from the Far East. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but there are many missionaries that have come forth out of China and are now beginning to evangelize the Muslim world as the gospel is continuing to move in a westerly direction around the globe. And again, in the end, will evangelize Israel again. So it makes a full circle from Jerusalem all the way westward around to Jerusalem again. Now, why do I say that the ox represents the apostolic mission as an extension of Christ's mission? Well, in 1 Kings chapter 7, verse 25, when Solomon built the laver for the temple, he built it, it's this big, enormous bronze bowl, he built it on top of 12 bronze bulls or oxen. And these 12 oxen, it says three of them faced north, three faced south, three faced west, three faced east. Now, what does this symbolism represent with regard to the gospel? Well, the bronze basin full of water, it and the 12 oxen represent the 12 apostles bringing the baptism of remission of sins to the four corners of the earth, or the whole world. The 12 oxen represent the 12 apostles, right? And we also see this analogy is used by Paul himself. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 6 through 10, the apostle there, Paul, talks about he equates the apostles with oxen. And he talks about how that them, Paul as an apostle, he could partake of the things that he needed from the people that he was evangelizing, and he uses oxen. He says that the law confirms this in the command where God says not to muzzle the oxen as it's treading out the grain. And he says, did God write that in the law because he cares about oxen? No, he wrote that because of us, that is the apostles, so that he who plows may plow in hope, and he who threshes may thresh in hope. Well, oxen were used for plowing, and oxen were used for gathering grain, and for grinding grain, and all these things. And so Paul uses these as an allegory, the oxen as an allegory for the apostles and all those who minister or are ministers of the gospel as being represented by oxen. Okay, so we see that both in the Old and in the New Testament. Well, then we have, of course, finally the face of a man on these four creatures. Of course, the face of the man represents Christ's humanity, that is, God became flesh. The eagle looks back at his pre-incarnate, some people might want to call it divinity, right, as being in the form of God, as it says in Philippians 2, but looking towards, as he's approaching Ezekiel, looking towards the south, that is the Son of Man coming in the form of man in order to purchase our redemption. And so that's what these four faces represent, and the fact that Ezekiel orients them to the compass actually, I think, helps us to interpret what they mean. All right, now, let's just read the last part of this, and then I'm going to finish. I know I'm going a little bit long today, but I'd like to finish the chapter if that's at all possible. Okay, it says, verse 8, it says, each of the four creatures had six wings, covered with eyes outside and inside. And by the way, if you read Isaiah chapter 6, I mentioned before that Isaiah saw a vision of God, and he saw these six-winged creatures. It specifically says they had six wings, and he calls them seraphim. So we know what they're called. They're called seraphim. From the singular, which is seraph, which means fiery ones. Anyway, it says they covered with eyes outside and inside. They take no rest day or night, saying, quote, holy, 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 Master God, sovereign over all, who was, who is, and who is to come. And this is very similar to what Isaiah heard these seraphim saying. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty. We see that also in Isaiah 6. Verse 9, and whenever the creatures will give glory and honor and thanks to the one sitting on the throne, the one living to the ages of the ages, the 24 elders will fall down before the one sitting on the throne and will worship the one who lives unto the ages of the ages. So what we see is that the four creatures with these four different faces are, there's a responsive worship going on of God with the creatures and then the elders responding back and forth between these two things. But I want you to notice the future tense of the verbs here. Notice its future tense. He says, whenever the creatures will give glory and honor and thanks, that the 24 elders will fall down before the one sitting on the throne and will worship the one who lives to the ages of the ages. So he's talking about the future. He's saying that when these do this, that they're going to do this in the future. Now, did John see them doing it? Yes, but he appears to understand this as a vision of the future, which is why he uses the future tense. And again, this is part of the court, the heavenly court, that is to be seated at the time that the Antichrist comes to power. Anyway, it says that the, verse 10, the 24 elders will fall down before the one sitting on the throne and will worship the one who lives unto the age of the ages. They will throw their wreaths before the throne, saying, Master, you are worthy to receive the glory and the honor and the power because you have created everything, and through your decree they exist and were created. Notice that the reason God is called sovereign over all is because he's the creator of all. He created it, therefore he owns it, therefore he rules it. All right. So the heavenly court, the purpose of the heavenly court is to seize the dominion of the earth away from human government, to pronounce judgment upon human government, and then to deliver the kingdoms of the world to the Son of Man who comes in the clouds of heaven that we read about back in Daniel chapter 7. Okay, that's all for today. Next time, we're going to get into chapter 5, where the seven-sealed scroll is introduced and also the Lamb who opens the scrolls. Okay, God bless you all, and we'll see you next time.